International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. The president said the international community has to confront the Israeli regime for its open violations of international law. Bezeshkian added, ending organized occupation of Palestine and the right of return for Palestinian refugees are only sustainable solutions to the Palestinian issue. He further called Israel the most serious threat to world peace, saying Iran continues to offer its absolute support to Palestinians to achieve their objectives. Across the world, streets have been filled with demonstrators marking the UN International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. Thousands have marched in Madrid to stand with the people of Gaza and denounce Israel's campaign of genocide.
Despite the alleged tricky peace that Trump has imposed, international solidarity must continue supporting the Palestinian people until we have what we all hope for, which is a free Palestine with a dignified life.
The Spanish government has no independence. It doesn't exercise it. It depends totally on the position of NATO, the EU, and therefore, the United States. It has made some gestures, partly out of self-interest, because of its electoral base, but the Spanish people are indeed pro-Palestinian.
Protesters wave Palestinian flags and urge Spanish authorities to cut ties with Israel. Protesters accuse the Spanish government of using the Gaza crisis for political gain and failing to take an independent stance. Organizers claim up to 500,000 people joined the pro-Palestine rally. Similar rallies also took place across other Spanish cities and a dozen of other European cities in support of Palestinian cause.
They gathered in huge numbers in the Irish capital on Saturday to mark the UN-recognised International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. The national march, organised by the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, was backed by more than 170 Irish civil society groups. Protesters are urging the Irish government to finally pass the Occupied Territories Bill, which would prohibit Irish companies from trading with businesses operating inside illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories.
The government made a pledge that they would pass that, and they haven't. And it can't just be about goods, it has to be about services. And the people of Ireland are demanding that. We voted for it, and they're just hiding behind politics.
Campaigners say the so-called ceasefire in Gaza is a fiction, pointing to ongoing Israeli violations and a mounting civilian death toll that adds to the tens of thousands already killed.
I'm opposed to genocide and apartheid. That's why I'm here. I've been marching for 2 years and I'll continue to march.
Humanitarian aid isn't getting in, the medical aid isn't getting in the sort of amounts they need. So it's still pretty desperate, and they're getting into wintertime there. You know, it's cold enough here today. So what's it like if you're living in a tent that's in tatters?
It's a sad day for the world and a sad day for America, a sad day for Britain, sad day for Ireland, that the murder machine of Netanyahu continues.
Yeah, the conditions for people living there are intolerable, and it's not a proper ceasefire, and we're continuing to allow Israel to have people living in apartheid states, and it's not right, and we're right to come out and protest and say it's wrong.
Activists are also calling on the European Union to impose robust sanctions on Israel and to ensure the Netanyahu administration is held accountable in international courts for its crimes against humanity. Because of their complicity and because they're not listening to the electorate, there's a good chance that political parties currently in government right across Europe could be punished when national elections next arise. We've already seen something similar here in Ireland. President Catherine Connolly was elected a landslide victory. She was very anti-establishment and very pro-Palestinian. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
With the Israeli regime routinely violating the so-called ceasefire in Gaza and committing atrocities against the Palestinians in the West Bank, the thousands who have descended upon central London today say the importance of expressing solidarity couldn't be overemphasized.
Well, there's no ceasefire. Gaza's still in a terrible state. The West Bank is creeping into an ever and ever worse state. And the media aren't reporting this, the mainstream media. That's why I'm here. And the least I can do is to be here in a bit of rain when people in Gaza are drowning in their tents in rain.
Organized for the 33rd time, It's a demonstration to also call attention to Britain's ongoing business-as-usual relations with the regime accused of genocide and with its so-called leaders wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes.
To see Britain and America trashing the international world order in order to support Israel as it commits terrible crimes in Gaza is a matter of deep shame.
To the racist in...
On the stage opposite Downing Street, they may not mention their name, but Palestine Action, the direct action group banned under terrorist laws by the Labour government for targeting Israeli weapons manufacturing sites on UK soil, is on many people's mind.
They have managed to mute all resistance all over Europe, and now if you are pro-Palestinian, you are a criminal, or you are, it's like we are losing our democracy here. It's very important to be here today, because this is one step towards fascism, which is developing everywhere.
Everyone knows it's a trap.
There's also sympathy for the six of the 24 activists jailed by the British government for trying to stop those weapons destined for the Israeli regime.
And I think in any other situation, we would hear about these things. You know, we would hear about hunger strikes if they were connected to Ukraine, maybe, or to Sudan or Congo. There's something about Palestine which means they don't even get their voices heard through the people who are trying to be allies with them here, because they're censored through.
Nearly 50 years ago, the United Nations named today the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, marking Resolution 181 advocating for the partition of Palestine into two states.
And yet another national demonstration terminates outside the halls of power, with the thousands who have gathered here saying they're here to assert that ordinary people in Britain refuse to be silent while their government continues to support a regime that is accused of genocide. Saipur is up, London.
Saturday saw the first unified protest against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza, with tens of thousands echoing the call of 85 organizations and marching through Paris. They gathered at the Place de la République to voice their anger at the sham peace plan imposed on Palestinians by US President Donald Trump.
Our message as Urgence Palestine here in Paris, with all the organizations, political parties and workers' unions, is to deliver a message of solidarity to the Palestinian people, and specifically to the people of Gaza, to the resistance of the Palestinian people.
Among the protesters were several elected representatives of opposition parties, including the chairperson of La France Insoumise, Jean-Luc Mélenchon. Speakers condemned the French complicity in the genocide and the neo-colonial policy of their government and the EU in Africa and West Asia.
A message which is to denounce the complicity of the French government, which is still repressing all the voices supporting the Palestinian people, and which is still providing a total impunity to the war criminals, to the Zionists.
A massive crowd marched from the Place de la République to the Place de la Nation, waving Palestinian flags and placards reading, "Palestine, we will not be silenced."
I'm against the genocide that is happening. I'm against all the crimes that are committed by the Israel government. And I want the French government to support the Palestine state.
Among the many different blocs that marched at the demonstrations were medical doctors, nurses, and the section of a group called Christians Against the Genocide.
We want that the church, the French church, open their eyes and open their ears, to the situation in Gaza.
Among the protesters were also the Trade Union Council, CGT, whose members had refused to load and unload several planes with arms deliveries to Israel.
The message of the latest demonstration was clear. The French government of Emmanuel Macron is complicit in the genocide. But people not only marched in solidarity with Palestine, but also in opposition to the French and Western imperialist policy in Congo, Sudan, Yemen and Lebanon. Dieter Reinisch from Paris.
Israel has launched new strikes in different parts of the Gaza Strip since the early hours of Sunday, as the regime continues to violate a ceasefire that's been in place since October the 10th. The Israeli military has reportedly targeted areas of southern city of Khan Yunis with heavy artillery, while its warplanes bombed Rafah, regime forces also attacked two neighborhoods in eastern Gaza City. In central Gaza, the Israeli army launched airstrikes in Abu Rage refugee camp, also in violation of the ceasefire deal. Since the ceasefire was implemented, over 350 Palestinians have been killed in the regime's attacks, with women, children, and the elderly making up a majority of the victims. The Gaza Health Ministry said on Saturday the Palestinian death toll has surpassed 70,000 people killed since the beginning of the regime's genocidal campaign on Gaza in 2023. The United Nations Children's Fund has warned thousands of children under the age of five continue to suffer from acute malnutrition in Gaza. According to UNICEF, nearly 9,300 cases of acute malnutrition were recorded in October alone. Agency noted that children in war-torn territory are also suffering from lack of adequate shelter, sanitation, and protection from the winter cold. It stated the high levels of malnutrition continue to endanger the lives and well-being of children of Gaza. Now, UNICEF warned situation is getting worse as the onset of winter is taking place, which will accelerate the spread of disease and increase the risk of death among those most vulnerable. According to UNICEF, Gaza needs at least 300,000 tents and prefabricated housing units to meet the basic shelter needs of the civilians. Meanwhile, a new poll shows U.S. President Donald Trump's approval rating has fallen to its lowest point of his second term. New surveys put approval of Trump's job performance at just 36%, down 5 points from October and close to his all-time low of 34% back in 2021. Support dropped across all political groups, including his own Republican Party. Analysts say frustration over high prices, domestic deployments of the National Guard to major U.S. cities, and U.S. aid to Israel have contributed to the decline. Trump's failure also to fully release files related to convicted child sex trafficker, his and personal friend Jeffrey Epstein, have also thrown off supporters. Venezuela has strongly condemned the U.S. president's announcement about closure of its airspace. Caracas described Trump's remarks as a colonialist threat against Venezuela's sovereignty and a violation of international law. Now, the Venezuelan authority says such statements constitute a hostile, unilateral, and arbitrary act incompatible with the most basic principles of international law, adding Venezuela will continue to fully exercise its sovereignty throughout its airspace. Iran's foreign ministry also slammed Trump's statement as blatant violation of most basic norms of international law and aviation. The ministry spokesman Ismail Baghaei described Washington's move as illegal and provocative, warning it poses unprecedented threat to the safety of international aviation. And the U.S. measure will also have serious consequences for the rule of law as well as international peace and security. And reporting out of Caracas, our correspondent Gladys Quesada joined us earlier with the latest on the growing tensions between the U.S. and Venezuela.
And I have to say, Venezuela is not standing alone. So this is more information regarding this topic, because Cuba has also been slamming the U.S. because of this kind of announcements. And also the Iranian chancellery has been saying that this is a violation of the rights of Venezuela to self-determination and sovereignty. Also, as we were saying, this is a unequal situation. This is very, very, unusual situation also that is mounting since August, since middle August. So this is just another part of this operation of terror in the Caribbean, of militarization of the waters close to Venezuela. And most of all, this is part of trying to inoculate terror and fear among the Venezuelan population. So Colombia, prior to this, has been assuming several stances in favor or behalf of Venezuela. And other nations also, they, Argentina offered support to the U.S. and to the Southern Command in some point of this operation, because the government of Javier Milei is openly against the president, Nicolas Maduro Moros, and his government. And the Milei administration has been also pressing, together with the United States, against the Bolivarian Revolution and the Bolivarian people. So those are many of the reactions. But, I think most of the pressure lays on the shoulders of the neighboring countries, and that's to say Brazil, and that's to say also Colombia.
North Korean leader has said that country's air force plays major role in exercising a nuclear war deterrence. Kim Jong-un made the statement on the 80th anniversary of the country's air force. He hailed the pilots for standing at the forefront of the struggle to protect the country's sovereignty and national interests. However, Kim stressed expectations for the force are truly great. The North Korean leader said the air force should resolutely repulse all sorts of espionage acts and the enemy's possible military moves. He also promised the Air Force will be equipped with new strategic military assets. Kim also attended air maneuver and observed unmanned aircraft and mobile missile launchers, among others. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the name of Allah, dear brother and sister, salam. You're listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, and in this episode, we're going to speak about the impact of social media on human interactions. Today is Sunday, 9th of Jamadi Uthani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 9th of the month of Azar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 30th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless these moments by listening to one verse from the Holy Quran. For today, we choose verse 4 of chapter Ibrahim. Then we come back to the studio, we speak about it more.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Wa ma arsalna min rasulin illa bilisani qawmihi liyubayyina lahum. Fayudillu Allahu man yasha'u wa yahdi man yasha'u.
And we did not send any messenger except speaking in the language of his people to state clearly for them. And Allah sends astray thereby whom he wills and guides whom he wills. And he is the exalted in might, the wise.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
One must keep in mind that the propagation of the truth by the Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, which has been done in the language of his local people, is not incompatible with the cosmopolitan and universal nature of the religion. For the content of the text or message does not have any particular medium of expression, and on the recommendation of the Quran, some groups must learn religious matters, whether by going on exodus or by giving up their special favors, so as they can teach others. The impact of social media on the human interactions was opened on the last episode of today's special. We continue today. In today's digitally connected world, social media has become an integral part of our daily lives. It allows us to stay connected with friends and family, shares our experiences, and voices our opinions on various matters. However, as the prevalence of social media continues to grow, so does the concern about its impact on human interactions. It's fair to say that the effect of social media on the society can be viewed as positive or negative, depending on the individual's perspective. However, there are far more gray areas than black and white.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from series of today's special from Arab English Radio. This is your host, Alif. As for today, we're going to talk about how does social media affect human interaction. Social media platforms have fundamentally reshape the landscape of human interaction, presenting a complex interplay of benefits and drawbacks. The advent of Web 2 technologies, characterized by user-generated content and network communication, has propelled platforms like Facebook, X, formerly Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok into ubiquitous presences in modern society. While these platforms facilitate unprecedented global connectivity and information dissemination, they also pose significant challenges to traditional forms of social interaction and individual well-being. This show tries to delve into the multifaceted impact of social media and social interaction, examining the underlying technologies and underlying technological mechanisms, psychological effects, and societal implications with a focus on a technically informed perspective. Please stay tuned. We are with you. Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
So let's look at the do's and don'ts. For example, one don't. Don't go oversharing. We are all guilty of this one. Whether it's the very intimate details of your latest beauty regime, several versions of a really nice view, cake, face, or lots of retweeting, no matter what form oversharing takes, it affects us all, and you don't want to forget to press that mute, hide, or delete button. Let's all take a moment before posing a status and think, do all of my online pals really need to know about this? Do I want my food to get cold while I'm photographing it? Does anyone actually care? Dealing with social isolation. According to Dr. Popito, PhD, a clinical psychologist, the prevalence of social media is greatly affecting the psychological and social development of children. She said, in early childhood, children need less unidimensional technological stimulation and need more multidimensional stimulation and socialization in the outside world, she said. The human brain requires multisensorial interactions early on to promote healthy neural connections and functioning later in life. Unfortunately, when children replace multisensorial interactions such as face-to-face socialization, communication, and play with unidimensional technologies, their brain developed is altered. The young brain becomes stymied or even overstimulated by social media that, ironically, does not promote healthy human socializing or communication, further thwarting healthy socialization at later developmental milestones in life, Dr. Popito said.
Social media often encourages a created and idealized representation of self. The pursuit of likes, shares, and followers can lead to a performance of identity where individuals present a carefully constructed persona rather than their authentic selves. This can lead to feelings of inauthenticity and a disconnect from one's true self. Algorithms prioritize content that is perceived as engaging, often emotionally charged, leading to the increased spread of sensationalized or dramatized content. But here there are some FOMOs. What are FOMOs? Fear of missing out. The constant stream of updates and notifications on social media can create a sense of FOMO, leading individuals to feel anxious or inadequate about their own lives. This anxiety can be exacerbated by the algorithmic amplification of curated content that often showcases idealized lifestyles and achievements. This is related to the concept of availability heuristic, where individuals are more likely to overestimate prevalence of certain events or experiences based on their accessibility in memory, which social media amplifies. But now, what about social comparison envy? This is another case that needs to be discussed and to be paid attention to. Social media platforms often facilitate social comparison, where individuals compare their own lives to those of others. This comparison can lead to feelings of envy, inadequacy, and low self-esteem, particularly when individuals compare themselves to idealized representations of others. The use of image editing software and filters further contributes to the creation of unrealistic standards of beauty and achievement.
That was a very essential and interesting topic. So inshallah, we'll continue during these days. Tomorrow, be with us with the same topic. Thank you for listening. That was today's special from IRIB English Radio. And till then, fi amanillah.
So far from you, yet to me you were always so close. I wandered lost in the dark. I closed my eyes to all the signs you put in my way. I walked every day further and further away from you. Ooh, Allah, you brought me home. I thank with every breath I take.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Worst enemy of the human being. It makes us not being able to see the beautiful things that are surrounding us. It makes us not realizing the good things that are happening in our lives. While we continue our sometimes not exciting and so-called modern life, some people come to remind us of the treasures we have and remove the dust of oblivion of the jewels that we keep in the basement of our houses. Lena is a German girl who recently published a book called Behind the Closed Curtains, which reminds us that it is possible to dust off our traditional home elements, remodel them, and give them a modern look, and create a daring, bold, and lively interior design. What Lena has recorded in her book is only a sample of the historical background of using decorations in Iranian interior design and architecture, which is rooted in combination of Iranian culture, religion, and art. And it has evolved as time passes by. As a matter of fact, Iranian houses were a place for development of spirit and physical calmness. There is one thing in common between us and Lena. Lena and her team traveled all over Iran and took their camera behind the closed curtains of Iranian houses. They shot photos and recorded lifestyles, decorations, and designs that are somehow modern, but have roots in our history. Something that was not possible a couple of hundred years ago, but Lena wants to make sure she produces something that can be used as a reference for future generations. Something that shows where and how some Iranians live in the 21st century.
I was a student of Middle Eastern Studies politics back in Germany, and was learning some Farsi, the Farsi of the books. And I wanted to learn the proper Farsi of the streets and really get to know the country itself. Traveling in Iran, I understood that, okay, there is something in Iran we don't have that way so much. We also have it in Europe, but not in that way, which is handicrafts. So what I understood is like, okay, handicrafts, that's something everyone can relate to because it is interior design, it is decoration. Everyone has a house you have to decorate. So that's where I started. I thought, okay, also in Iran, there will be people who decorate their house and decorate them in a nice way, even if they're probably not interior designers.
What makes Iranian decorative elements more special is that they're timeless. You always find some shining aspects in them, something to fall in love with.
I think it's really cool when you're mixing something from old and bringing it into the modernity. So this is, for example, what Murtaza did here with these henna stones. which are traditionally used to paint the, or you place the feet on it the night before you're getting married, and then you got the henna painted on the feet. So this was the original use, but what Mortaza did, he copied them and used them as basically the feet for a coffee table. It is used outside of the religious context. It's decoration. And I think it is really a beautiful and impressive piece, especially, of course, with all the feathers in this pink, fleshy color, contrasting to the white of the house. In Iranian culture, I mean, there is the flower as a topic is really important. So what we see here is like a lale, actually it's a light, which means also in Persian the flower. And here I think it's really nice the shape you find them throughout Iran. These either candles or nowadays also they work with electricity. But it's a soft shape, so again, it's a curve like in Iranian architecture you find a lot.
Amir Hussein is an Iranian artist inspired by his roots. What is more felt at his house is a daring innovation that definitely comes from a character full of taste and art. What he does is to introduce another usage for the elements of Persian architecture and art, and thus let us see beyond the ordinary and normal elements of our life. A center yard with a pond in the middle, which is surrounded by rooms with different usages during different seasons of the year. At the first glance, you think this is a typical Iranian traditional house. But for sure, it is nothing like my grandparents' house. From what I remember, many decorative and architectural elements are the same, but they're being used very differently. And this creativity is certainly part of the beauty of this house. Is definitely not a piece of cake, especially when you're looking for some very unique items that are infused with Persian culture and our traditions. But remember that there's an artist inside of every one of us. An artist that knows what is beautiful and what is not. An artist that knows how to put things together. But we don't necessarily have the creativity to make these decorative items. And for that reason, people in places like here made our lives easy. You just need to come here and see all these beautiful items. Pick what you love. Make sure that it goes good with your other stuff. And make sure that it fits your personality. Stores like this are the results of a recently started movement by some young Iranians who renovate old houses and decorate them with antique-like and traditional decorative items. I'm very inspired by all these amazing stuff and looking forward to use them to decorate my own house sometime soon.
I should say this is the happiest day of my life because I published a book on interior design in Iran, and this is the final day, the book presentation. I feel super happy. I'm super exhausted too because it has been hard work. I've gone through a lot of ups and downs in the last 8 months, but I feel proud to now say, okay, I published a book, this is the book, and I'm a writer. And I've done something for Iran, a country I really love, and I started with the purpose to show a different Iran to the world, and I think I achieved it.
And Iran is a mysterious land. Every corner of it and every aspect of it is a book with thousands of pages, with beautiful images and amazing stories. Shahriyar Azimi for Iran.
You may cut off my breath, but never my faith, no, never my faith, it's my voice. You may tame both my hands, but never my soul, no, never my soul, it's my voice.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Imagine this, you're in a meeting, and a junior colleague, maybe someone much younger than you, points out a mistake in your idea. How do you react? Do you welcome the truth, or do you let ego step in? Or if you're a boss, and your employee, says something, a new idea that may not be aligned with your idea. So the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, gave us a timeless principle that directly answers this. Although the Arabic phrase is beautiful, let me read the translation. Accept the truth from whoever brings it, whether young or old, even if he is your enemy. And reject falsehood from whoever brings it, whether young or old, even if he is your friend. See? So this hadith strikes at the heart of human weakness, our tendency to judge truth by who says it, rather than what is said. Too often, we dismiss advice from someone younger, poorer, or disliked, and we excuse wrong words if they come from someone we admire. But the Prophet is telling us truth is not about status, age, or relationship. Truth stands on its own, and falsehood remains false, even if spoken by someone we love. So psychology actually confirms how difficult this is. Researchers talk about confirmation bias. Our brain's natural tendency to accept information that agrees with us and reject what challenges us. Similarly, authority bias makes us trust those we admire or consider powerful, even if they are wrong. So, for example, experiments have shown that people are more likely to follow dangerous instructions if they come from authority figures, while ignoring correct advice from those they perceive as less important. But societies thrive when people are trained to evaluate ideas themselves, not just the mouths they come from. That's why education, critical thinking, media literacy, and humility are so vital. So how we live this teaching of the Holy Prophet? Pause before reacting. When someone corrects you, ask, is it true? Before asking, who said it? And value youth. Children or younger people often see things with fresh clarity. Don't ignore their words just because of age. And hold loved ones accountable. If a close friend or family member is wrong, don't excuse it. True love means guiding them back to what's right. See? And train humility. Make it a habit to say, you're right, I was wrong. It's simple, but it builds integrity and respect. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Salam to all tuning in. This is Iran Radio, broadcasting from the beating heart of Tehran. I'm here to welcome you into a world of conversation, culture, and insight. Iran Radio presents some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The word Bismillah appears 114 times in the Quran. It occurs twice in chapter An-Naml, whereas chapter Toba is the only surah which does not begin with Bismillah. Quran believes in life after death, and the Quran teaches us that besides having a body, a human being also has a spirit, a soul. And when a person dies, the physical body vanishes, while the soul remains. Coming up now, another captivating segment of radio productions. Then it's time for Youth Station, a program created for young minds, navigating modern life through an Islamic lens. Topics include faith, friendships, personal style, prayer, and finding a shared identity in today's world. Next, don't miss Spotlight. So stick around, there's more to come.
On September 22, 1980, when the Islamic Revolution of the Iranian people was not yet 2 years old, Saddam attacked Iran with the green light from the U.S. The former Iraqi dictator has signed a peace agreement with Mohammad Reza Pahlavi 5 years earlier, which had ended his border disputes with Iran. But just a few days before issuing the order to attack, much like the U.S. president who tore up the JCPOA agreement, he appeared openly and confidently on television and declared all his commitments with Iran null and void. Forty-five years later, with a 12-day imposed war, all these memories were revived for Iranians. This time, with America's green light, Benjamin Netanyahu, instead of Saddam, attacked Iran at a moment when indirect negotiations between Tehran and Washington were underway to supposedly resolve Iran's nuclear file peacefully. Now the entire world was waiting to see whether, just as Iranians under the guidance of their leader in the 8-year war with Saddam managed to force the enemy into accepting a ceasefire and defeat, in the second imposed war, the Israeli regime and its supporters would also be compelled to retreat or not. Contrary to its aspirations, the Israeli regime is not major naval or land power, and all of its military capability lies in air superiority, reliant on the support of the United States and NATO. It was this capability that Israel emerged victorious in the major wars of 1967 and 1973. Yet, war planners knew that with traditional methods, an attack on Iran would not be possible. Iran shares no land border with this regime, and the distance to its sensitive and strategic points lies beyond the flight range of Israeli warplanes without aerial refueling. For this reason, airstrikes of the kind carried out in Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria are beyond the capacity of the Israeli Air Force. Thus, in the recent imposed war, the Israeli regime once again resorted to its old and once successful tactic of blitzkrieg, this time adapted to the conditions of the modern era and drawing on experiences from Syria and the war in Ukraine. The term Blitzkrieg itself entered the military vocabulary back during the Second World War, at the time when the Nazis decided to settle the fate of Europe. Hitler had many options, one of which was Blitzkrieg at the start of his invasion of France. At that time, France was considered one of the largest armies in the world, and in a conventional war, could have stopped the Nazi war machine. But that did not happen. The Germans, not aiming merely